Welcome to Heal and Go Public with Karen Hibner. Picture this. I sit in a large, open, airy, almost breezy warehouse on one of those little gray artist stools at a massive work table. You crack the door open, I turn with a welcoming and knowing smile on my face. I gently but joyfully wave for you to come in, and there's a stool set up for you. I ask you, what do you want to create or recreate today? I've built this studio to be a judgment-free space, a space that you can expand and expand and expand in, a space where you can surprise yourself with what you can build. We are all continually creating ourselves, who we are and how we are. I believe our own creative process is the door to our healing. I believe sharing our creations is often the access point to healing for others. I believe in healing and going public. I'm your creative guide, Karen Hibner. I'm an artist, podcast producer and editor, and former spiritual director. Let's explore what it means to create. Let's wonder at what it means to heal and go public. All right. Thanks everybody for being here. I'm so thrilled to chat with you again. And I have a guest in the space again, somebody that's more in, we're having a healing conversation today, as well as going public, as this person is public with their wild and wonderful work in the world. So we'll see what comes out in this conversation as far as what it looks like to heal and go public. But I have a new friend of mine with me here. We met in a networking space that was just, oh my goodness, I can't tell you how many times I got goosebumps, but it was an immediate connection. There are just so many conversations that we are both in. There's creativity, there's art, there's healing, there's spirituality, there's all of these different things that we are able to collaborate on and dialogue on. And I am just so thrilled to see what happens in this conversation today and where it goes. So my friend Maureen Burford is here today with me. And let me give you a formal intro via her bio so that you can get to know her in that way a little bit. And then we'll ask her to introduce herself as well. So Creative Lives Executive Director Maureen Burford has 4 decades of experience working with students from the early years through college. She has partnered with author Ellen Tad to bring Tad's framework for wise education based on the chakra system to thousands of children and teens. In 2019, Maureen received the Lynn Von Trapp Award for Excellence in Leading Youth Programming in Vermont. She has worked as a performing artist and director since 1980 and loves the process of creating and discovering with others. Maureen, what a beautiful bio. Thank you for being with us here today.
It's such a joy. And I really did have that similar feeling of recognition when we met in that chat space, Karen. Oh,
I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful. Too. And I'm just so grateful to share with folks here today, like the work that you do and what you're providing access to and all of that. So that's your formal bio. Can you tell us a little bit more about whichever angle you want to take it today, more about you, what Creative Lives does and what you are able to access through Creative Lives, whatever kind of is hitting your fancy today?
Sure. You know, I was thinking about myself in terms of how we're all kind of finding ourselves as we wind through our lives. It's curvy, right? But when I was a little person, and still now, I was curious about how people were doing, how other kids were feeling in school. Why didn't we talk about that more? You know, how people were learning. I was watching my parents and keeping a little notebook of, yeah, I would do that, but I would never do that.
Wow.
Kind of feeling. And when I trace that back, it sort of organically leads into exploring my own attributes through music and dance and drama, all these things I loved growing up. But then when I was working with kids and teens as a teacher of music and the arts in bigger, in bigger groups, I was really falling in love with how to help them be who they are. And this beautiful thing that we do when we're teaching, we have content to teach, but then we get sparked, right? We want to help this child or this group develop as whole and healthy people. That always involves helping unpack some of the negative conditioning that has impacted them. And so over the years of teaching and performing and working in the arts, I got really curious about what was missing in my understanding. I wanted to better understand myself as a mom, as a teacher, and, you know, and frankly, make more sense of my own life's journey, my divorce from my husband, who's still a dear friend, and other life events. So ultimately, this led me to a class with Ellen Tad, her meditation and philosophy class. And I remember walking in the door, I was probably in my mid-30s, and sitting down thinking, I hope this is really going to be meaningful in my life. And by the end of the class, I thought, this is the teacher that I've been waiting to meet. You know that feeling you have when you meet somebody that you're meant to know? I am going to discover from her the pieces about human development, myself, other people, that I really want to understand. So that's been my work. And that's really the purpose of Creative Lives as an organization, is to help children and the beloved people who are raising and teaching them and mentoring them to actualize their unique potential.
Wow, Maureen, that is, I mean, we can end there. That's fine. I'm just kidding. I'm going to ask you so much more about this, but that is so beautiful. I mean, there's a level that it hits on for me personally, thinking about, I was a child that described myself as an artist from very early on. And I am, as a 34-year-old now, continually trying to get back to the pureness of that and breaking down all of the voices and this is just an example or an anecdote, but breaking down all of the voices around what it means to be an artist or what it has to look like or and trying to get back to that little girl that knew that she already was an artist, right? So just thinking about the work that you're doing, and then also as a mother of a 4-year-old little girl, also thinking about how much me being trained as a spiritual director, an artist, my husband being trained and practicing as a therapist, always trying to create and facilitate to the best of our ability space for her to freely express who and how she is, because of how much, I mean, even within our house, even with that intention, within our house, around the world, everything that will come in to chat against who she believes herself to be or who she finds herself to be. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I love thinking of little Maureen, like taking notes on like, I would do that this way and I would do that this way. Like being, I mean, I resonate with you as far as being a highly sensitive person and being a noticing and very awake and plugged in child. It's interesting to think back to those years of being a small person. And I don't remember a ton, but thinking of like how we took in all of this information and how, this is kind of scary as a parent, but how the child is really mirroring so much and learning so much about who and how they are from how their parents and the adults around them take them in and all of that. So I just, all of that to say, I'm just really grateful for the work that you're doing and that you're offering a more grounded context for folks to see and understand and maybe like an even attuned or accepting context.
That's a lovely word. I love the word attuned. I do, because I'm a musician. It's this feeling of tuning ourselves up to our own, you know, juicy and wonderful and unique vibration. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you struck on a chord too in terms of this work, and we can talk more about Ellen's understanding of the chakra system coming up here, because it's riveting. Her own journey to discovering this and why it was important to her. But one of the things that Ellen talks about in her approach, and that I always felt as a parent too, and that I can feel you feeling as a parent of your daughter, is how are we being detectives of this person's, this small individual's unique path, unique attributes, helping them with the strengths they need, and maybe dealing with some of their areas where they're not as strong so they can express all that they're here to be. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, in a way, but it's part of the deal, right? We have to accept that that conditioning that comes in means part of our job as parents is unpacking that and helping mitigate it and helping our kids understand in age-appropriate ways why it might be happening. So that kind of dovetails into talking about how helping kids with tools that strengthen their chakra system, which is what this approach is all about, how that dovetails into their ability to have some agency in this unpacking process themselves.
Yes. Wow. Okay. So then tell me more, Maureen. This is really interesting. This is great. Will you, I mean, I have an understanding of what you mean when you say chakra system, but can you give us a little bit of background as far as, or a little bit of a definition or explanation of what you mean by that?
Sure. And so, you know, my general understanding of the chakras before I met Ellen was that they're energy centers that are in our energy body and that they line up with places in the physical body. But the books that I read didn't really give me a sense of how that could help my quest to help children thrive. But when I met Ellen, what was so interesting was her take on the system. She got really curious about these energy centers because she was really curious about what drives human behavior. And she was also able to kind of observe the state of the energy centers in people. She was gifted with a natural clairvoyance, which is a real clear sight. And that's not a gift that everybody experiences easily, but for Ellen, it was right there and it informed her curiosity. So kind of like Piaget was observing his children, she observed hers, but with this added benefit of seeing the energy centers. And seeing that in others, and what happened was she thought, wow, there are certain circumstances, environments, actions, attitudes that seem to help these centers look very distinct and lined up. And when that's the case, people seem to really be fulfilling their potential, feeling good about who they are, being themselves. And wow, when these centers are looking kind of amorphous and fuzzy, I'm observing circumstances and conditioning and actions and attitudes that are causing dominant or diminished function in the chakras. She looked at this further and realized, wow, dominant or diminished function in a particular chakra leads to particular challenging behaviors and interactions. It got really fascinating. And I think that over the process of maybe a decade or more, Ellen was also wondering, now, how can I talk about this succinctly and clearly and help many people with the tools and strategies that will support this well function? So she would further add that each of the seven chakras represents a different aspect of our nature. You know, how we, when we feel inspired or when we feel love in our heart, you know, all of these different aspects of our experience. And it's through the chakra system that we receive and digest. These are really Ellen's words, receive and digest and emanate our life's experience. So that means helping this function well is helping us on the path to really our own fulfillment and our potential. And boy, I really find that her experiences and her understandings bear out in practice. Mm-hmm. So a framework for wise education organizes human development and kind of simplifies it into looking at seven categories that are based on the function of the chakras. And what are the strategies and tools that we can individualize for children to help them gain that healthy function?
Wow, this is fascinating. So will you, this is kind of a backtrack question, but also kind of hits on the very end of what you said. But knowing that you have a background in education, you probably have at least some hours in human development, right? And I'm guessing with your mention of Piaget, I'm guessing that a lot of your human development prior to experiencing Helen Tadd's work was predominantly informed by psychology and neurobiology. Is that true?
That's true.
So what was it like to, I'm guessing that you probably have some sort of, and you can tell as much or as little about this as you desire, but I'm assuming that you probably have some sort of spiritual bent to you, that when you found something that was an understanding that like added to this foundation in psychology and neurobiology, like that kind of made it all click into place. Can you tell me a little bit of that experience of, I'm going to use the word reconciling, but it may not have felt like that, but finding a system for understanding human development that either added to or just kind of exploded your understanding of human development prior from your educational like background?
Yeah, it's such a good question. I mean, the first thing that pops into my mind is being a little girl and going to Episcopal church with my parents and sitting in the front row and really listening deeply and having this to the minister. I didn't want to go to Sunday school because I like listening to this grown up, even when I was little, the minister talk and thinking, yeah, I think that could be true, but I'm not sure about that. I had this sort of inner barometer around people's spiritual philosophy. And mine was pretty simple. It was like this. Everybody is good. Mm-hmm. Everybody is good on the inside. And I don't think that's really at odds with what I learned in my master's program in education and human development, that we're looking at children as innately valuable and good. But, and over time, and I think when my mom died, my mom was actually killed when I was 27, and I had a sort of open but agnostic point of view at that time. And I remember walking into the funeral home to see her literally in the casket. I'm sure others have had this experience. It's a seminal moment, right? Mm. And feeling this overarching, complete knowing that she existed beyond this body.
Wow.
And it wasn't that she was just in my heart, as many people were comforting me by saying, oh, she'll always be with you in your heart. Well, sure, that's true. But I felt her presence. Mm-hmm. And that presence was sort of freed from human confusion. Mm-hmm. And the first words out of my mouth, literally out loud, were, because my mom and I, we loved each other enormously, but we could really grapple. The first words out of my mouth at that moment of expansive awareness about who she really was were, oh my God, Mom, I totally forgive you. Mm. And I know you totally forgive me.
Wow.
It was this. So that is the feeling that I have. And, some people might refer to that as a person's innate goodness or their inner value or their inner qualities or their inner spirit. Mm-hmm. But that piece we need to be talking about in raising children. Mm-hmm. Because that part of who everybody is to me always is beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's always, always beautiful and unique in its own expression of what that beauty is.
Wow. I mean, that just takes my mind in so many directions. But I want to say first off, thank you for sharing that with us and for sharing that your experience in that. And I'm also sorry that you lost your mom at 27. And I'm thankful for the way that you share your story now. My brain is making a lot of connections right now. I'm very dedicated to creation in hopes of transformation of self and society. And I hear that that is a massive value of yours also. And I hear that a connected value or a value within your web of that is you are pursuing healing society through healing future generations. And I get goosebumps at that. I begin to tear up at that because I think that it's such massively valuable work. I look into my daughter's face every day and just wonder at what she's going to see and what it's going to be like here. And I have taken it on, my husband and I, a value of ours is that it is our job and our role to equip her with everything we possibly can. For her to not only be a resilient human being, but to also be a very emotionally aware and wise human being that she would have the tools that she needs to navigate her emotional reality as well as the realities that her generation is going to have to face. So I think all of that to say, I'm just grateful, but I want to hear so much more. So I become interested in, I am familiar with, vaguely familiar with the chakra system through experiencing it in a Reiki setting. I work with a Reiki practitioner that uses the chakra system as a foundation for understanding Reiki flow, stagnancy, all of those things, right? This show is brought to you by my podcast editing business. Do what you came here to do, which probably wasn't podcast editing. Sharing your particular magic by going public through podcasting helps others sink into their own special kind of magic. Then we all heal this world together. We need your voice. We need your story and what you have to offer this world. I work with coaches, activists, spiritual directors, therapists, authors, and all kinds of creatives to help them get their particular wonderful out to the world. Through podcasting, my clients are able to give freely some of their greatest offerings in order to grow their audience, land more clients, and nurture those clients. My clients' audiences get to know them, get to feel what it's like to work with them, and build an actual connection and relationship. Y'all, voices are amazing. By waiting on your files, I help keep you accountable to creating powerful content for your audience. I help you to continue nurture your audience and care for the people in your orbit. Also, let's be real, by creating this regular content, you're getting way more hands-on and keeping the pulse of your business and your audience. Side note, content that we can then repurpose for all your other platforms you feel like you have to be on. If you've been editing yourself, I save you massive amounts of time and allow you to speak freely. No more worrying or stressing while you're recording about having to go back and edit it or starting over or having to pause or having to stop and edit your thoughts while you're talking. By refining your recordings and beautifully packaging them, I help you deliver high quality, high value content to your audience and current and future clients that changes who and how they are, which changes the world. Schedule a free 1-hour discovery call with me today. I'll help you define your goals and intentions for your show, your greatest challenges, and your greatest wins in the space, and how to continue creating a show that is in perfect alignment with who and how you are. I also offer consult calls and podcast strategy packages. Get on my schedule for your free discovery call today at karenhibner.com or through the link in the show notes. Now let's get back to it. Can you paint me a little bit of a picture of how are you equipping adults with, and I know you're not going to give me all of it. You can't possibly in this time here, but how are you equipping adults with this understanding to help children, or how are you equipping children? What does it look like? What does it look like, Maureen? How does this work?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it could be helpful to just go down the seven chakras and then maybe focus in on one and look at its function when it's functioning well, or when it becomes dominant or diminished, why that happens, what behaviors that might lead to, and you know, kind of what we can do. But we'll see how that flows. But
perfect.
I appreciate Ellen's awareness. The chakras kind of develop in kids with it. They come with a big open crown chakra. So Ellen starts by talking about the top of the chakra system, which isn't how I learned it from my own other experiences with teachers who use chakra and look at the flow of the chakras in healing. Mm-hmm. So from a practical developmental standpoint, she talks about the top of the head. Babies are born with an open crown chakra, which is the center of trust and inspiration, keeps this center open and healthy. So when kids are feeling inspired, it's great. It can close quickly when they get discouraged, but it can bounce right back. The third eye center is right in the middle of the forehead. And this is the center that naturally deals with discernment, focus and concentration, wisdom. Moving down the throat chakra, which is a very delicate part of the body, is where we experience our self-esteem, our sense of being valuable just for who we are, mm-hmm. and a curiosity then to learn about the world, ourselves, each other, and express through words and music and voice, and or with our hands if we sign, because, you know, The heart chakra is just where we would imagine, right in that chest where you feel that swell of love when you're looking at your beautiful daughter. And this center also embodies courage, the courage to share ourselves in the world and do the loving thing. I'll say one cool thing about the chakra system and Ellen's take on love, which is that love is this warm, unifying force that makes us feel connected and makes us glad to be alive. But loving is doing what supports the growth of self and others. So the heart is not a discerner, but the third eye is. And when they're functioning together, we feel wisdom and love. Very, very powerful. Going down to the solar plexus, which is above the belly button and below the rib cage, this center is where we feel emotion and intuition. And when it's functioning well, that leads to a sense of harmony, a feeling of inner peace, and alignment with clarity. So here's another key principle from the framework. Our clarity in the third eye informs our feelings. We'll come back to this chakra maybe, because this is an interesting one to look at in depth. Going back down, the next chakra is what Ellen refers to as the identity chakra, and many people would think of it as the sacral chakra. It's in the lower abdomen, and it's sort of a center of balance, the balance of our receptive and our directive side. So we all have both. We are not introverts or extroverts. We all have the capacity to lead and follow, speak and listen, act and wait. And that center, when healthy, is how we express our creative selves in the world, how we form healthy relationships, express our sexuality. You know, it's our identity in the world, our confidence in who we are out in the world and with others. And then the final chakra of the seven is the base. It's located at the base of the spine, and it is the center of discipline and responsibility. And this chakra is really non-existent in babies, right? We take care of everything for them, but as they're developing, we are helping them gain strengths of mind. You know, we're helping them learn. We're helping them form a healthy inner attitude about who they are, their inner life. We're helping them with disciplines of the body. So body, mind, inner life, and the habits that strengthen those are all the dominion of the base. It's the just do it chakra. You know, you do it, you practice, you repeat. It takes repetition to learn. Attending to order and detail strengthen the chakra. Yeah, when they're all working together, you could imagine how strong discipline in the base gets balanced with enthusiasm in the crown, and that too much of one or the other could become problematic, you know? If you're undisciplined, you know, you can get chaotic. And if you're too disciplined without feeling enthused, we, our children, can start to feel like work is drudgery. So, yeah, that's an overview of Ellen's gleanings about the chakra system.
Wow, that's super helpful. So some things that I'm hearing, and I'm going to try not to go too personal, but like some things that I'm hearing, I definitely have heard before about like this balance of them. And like, especially through like experiencing Reiki, through the lens of the chakra system and all of that, we can hone in on an area that's being lit up or activated or whatever it looks like, or that we're drawn to, and noticing too that it's about energy. So it's if things are, and I forget the two words that you were using, but like if things are stagnant or if things are moving, if things are blocked, if things are all of those things. And this is a new experience for me and a new learning just within the last year also. And it's been a very fun and very interesting thing to learn. And there's such incredible tools too, and there's so much history around the chakra system. And I know that Ellen is presenting things in maybe a little bit different languaging in a little bit different ways, but even things like sound baths for particular chakras, like there's just so much resource material around some of these understandings. But I have not experienced, I was really struck and really hit when you mentioned the identity piece with the sacral chakra. I have known, especially since birthing my child, my osteopath actually recommended after I had my child, she was like, Karen, your head, this is her language, right? Your head is stuck in your like pelvis. She was like, your head is stuck there. All of your energy is going there. And she was like, you've got to see an energy healer to like help you sort this out. And of course, like I let years go by because I was in a very, very different religious understanding than would allow me to experience kind of these conversations in these spaces. But when you related, when you said the identity is related to that, oh my gosh, because I've been working with that chakra space for years now without unknowingly and definitely this past year intentionally. And so much of the work that I'm doing in my life is around my identity and also that like director and receiver. Like when am I to use my voice? When am I to be quiet? As I'm looking at all of these things that are happening in our culture in the United States and in our systems. Yeah, so it's just an incredible tool to get to wonder at and another languaging and another system to glean so much more understanding. But I think I have never, this maybe has been a limit in my mind. I have thought about practicing doing Reiki shares with my daughter and getting to practice with her and that sort of thing. But I have not necessarily tuned into using the chakra system to check in with her or to attune in and around her to notice. So this is really powerful stuff.
You know, what strikes me is there is so much wonderful information about the chakras and how the energy flows between them. But what I feel Ellen brings is kind of a missing piece in our collective understanding of development, which is detail about what helps them function well and behaviors that we can observe in people that indicate how they're functioning. So this gets really practical in raising a kid. And if we looked at, for example, the solar plexus chakra, which is that center of emotion and feeling, in this culture, this chakra has become very dominant. And so why? What causes this dominant? And what does it mean when it's dominant? When this center is dominant, what's happened is that we've begun to place our focus, which really belongs in the third eye, because that's the center of focus. So when we, you know, if we're thinking about helping a child activate their third eye, we can literally help them concentrate on a point in the middle of their forehead and imagine there's a window there and that they're looking through that window. They can focus on a point on the wall, focusing on a point, doing detailed work that opens and activates focus in the third eye chakra. But challenging circumstances or habits or an overemphasis on feeling in the culture, how do you feel? Lead with your, follow your gut. All of this advice, it gets very confusing. And we tend to drop our focus and mistakenly place it in the solar plexus. Mm. When we do that, our third eye diminishes. It's like we've turned off our navigating equipment, literally. And we're trying to feel our way. And our feelings come from all kinds of places. They can come from our own reactions. They can come from our clarity. They can come from other people. The solar plexus starts to get really oriented around feeling more, and we become confused. We start to want things to go the way we want in order for us to feel okay. We become self-centric for that reason, because it's all about our feelings. And in that process, turmoil and anxiety can increase. So there is a direct link between this mistaken overfocus in the solar plexus where feelings are and this radical increase in anxiety among children. I mean, I think the statistic this year is that 20% of children are being diagnosed with severe anxiety. I think that's a statistic of the Journal of American Medicine. Mm. And it is this chronic focus in the solar plexus. It becomes debilitating. Mm. So then people turn to releases like venting in an angry way, or even turning to violence to release, or eating to assuage, you know, feelings or abusing substances that, again, help assuage the feelings. It's so easy to be reactionary when in that state. And if that goes on too long, The other side of the chakra is that, you know, kids start to shut it down. They don't want to feel. So they suppress their feelings, they diminish them, they push them aside. And that leads to other challenges. When we're not feeling empathy, it's harder for us to relate to people. We can start to feel lonely. Mm-hmm. We can act without care, you know? So this swinging around really gets helped in the solar plexus by two things. One is cultivating third eye focus, which shifts, which informs feelings and right sizes the solar plexus. This is a skill I can teach kids to do with a simple technique. The other is to cultivate an attitude of acceptance, which doesn't mean complacency or just everything's great the way it is. Acceptance in these terms means just acknowledging what's happening so that we don't react, but we can figure out how to respond. And that's not so easy. That takes practice. So that's a deeper dive into the solar plexus in terms of what could cause the dominance or diminishment, but also the tools and strategies that we can apply to help our kids develop a natural habit of focusing in the third eye. And I mean, the last thing I'll add here in this soliloquy is that strengthening that third eye focus, from my standpoint and experience with all the people I've worked with, it needs to be as important as teaching kids how to read or write, mm-hmm. or feed themselves, you know, mm-hmm. or go to bed on time so their bodies are healthy. It's basic to our well-being.
Yes, this is a number of times through our conversation, this has come to mind, but I remember watching a documentary and I think it was by an Icelandic creator and it was on Netflix for a while. And it was all about emotional intelligence and how folks were in different ways trying to increase emotional intelligence and decrease reactivity in children in schools because of equipping them with tools to be able to go kind of inward and regulate. The biggest focus within the documentary was meditation and contemplation. But I love that you're taking that a step further by using the tool of the chakra system and focusing on the third eye to give access to that, out of that reactivity, out of that response, and into that kind of attunement and noticing. If that makes sense.
And it does. Yeah.
I think that it's incredibly powerful. I completely agree with you. I think that there should be, but I also know that in this country, we've already bogged our school system with so many things that we need to educate kids with, right? And wondering, okay, we've bogged down teachers, but how can we change the system to focus on what we actually need to equip kids with? And you and I could probably talk about this forever. My family, we've chosen to do things a little bit differently because of our own experience with education and around the system. But I love that you are also not only trying to heal society by offering these practices and these tools, these understandings, but also in a way you're kind of revamping the system in the small ways that you can as well, which I think is when we create system change is when we can actually heal society. So I'm grateful for that. I just want to name that. And I see that deeper cut and I see that deeper understanding as well. I think the real feedback that I want to give you and the real kind of relational piece that I have, reflection that I have when I hear you talking about all of that is that, again, my child, we were just traveling. I was just talking with a friend about this yesterday when I was doing a life update. We were just traveling with family a couple of weekends ago, and it was a fast trip. It was the first time she flew. It's the first time she's in an airport. We're also very mindful of, she's not in a school. She's not around a lot of large groups of people in frenetic spaces, she's hardly ever in environments where we have to be anywhere at a certain time. And so we lumped all of that into just like 4 days of just chaos, right? Just like we're like walking very quickly through airports. We're carrying all of our stuff. We're on planes. And she loved it. She said that her favorite part was taking off and landing, which I just am so grateful for because I am not a good flyer. She did not get that from me. But talk about trying to regulate as a child, as being a mother also. But so fast forward, these 2 to 4 days, because 2 days were travel days. We just have to travel a ton with family, doing all of this action-packed stuff, meeting all of these new people, having all of these new experiences. We get home and I'm trying to think of a gentle way to say it, but almost, I mean, she's almost a different person, right? She's expressing in all of these ways that she doesn't usually express. And she's moving through these emotions and these feelings and these things that she doesn't normally express herself. She's lashing out. She's really short-tempered. She's screaming at everything. And I was reminded on the cohort yesterday that like she feels comfortable enough to be processing all of the things of the weekend with her parents. And I'm really grateful for that, right? But I'm also thinking of how powerful would it be? I mean, we have tools from Buddhism, from contemplation, from meditation in our household that we are able to use with her to kind of help her plug in and attune. But wondering at some of these exercises that you have that would like equip her even more to be able to not only be with those feelings, but also to focus in different areas, because she is just like exploding emotion out right now, right? Yeah. So I think I'm just like resonating with what you're saying as we're experiencing this thing of like, as parents, we just chose to go through this experience and she's processing. It was an emotion-filled weekend. Also, it was a celebration of life and it was all of these things, right? So I think that's just where I'm tracking also, is thinking of these tools with children and how I feel like part of, maybe there's a question in here, but I feel like part of your experience is probably also educating adults in order to educate children, or yeah, educating children that then go on to educate adults. Because I know that's something that came up in the documentary, is how these kids that were learning about meditation and contemplation in schools are then able to take it home to their family, yeah, that are then able to not react to their children, but are able to then regulate and then respond their children too, right? Yeah. How do you see that come up in your own practice?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. And there's this beautiful, you know how when kids are little, you're kind of teaching them colors by having them compare, right? They look at blue and it's different than red and it's different than yellow and green, and then it gets more nuanced. So one of the exercises that we teach kids and their parents and teachers is to practice comparing. What it's like when focused in the solar plexus and going through an experience that you've had that maybe had some challenge to it. For kids, we might start by saying, imagine you're late for a really important day at school. And it's not your fault. Some of your parents did, made you late. Now you're in the car, and focus in your solar plexus. How do you feel about being late? How do you behave? What do you do? And so they get a sense of what it's like when they deliberately place their focus in the center of emotion. Then we call this the TAD technique, because it's such a great technique that Ellen came up with. Then we imagine that they're lifting up like an elevator out of the solar plexus, up, up, up through the torso, through the body. So that actual exercise of the elevator actually helps them begin to focus. And then we plant our focus right in the middle of the forehead. Imagine there's a window that opens up, or a miner's light, and holding focus in the wise view and keeping it there. How do they look at the exact same experience? And they have a very dramatic experience often. So, for example, a little one in, I think she was fourth grade, was a guinea pig in our after school lab. And there were probably 30 kids sitting around K through fifth grade. And this little girl agreed to be our volunteer. And she came up and put her focus in her belly. And what she looked at was a situation 4 days before where her friends had teased her after making a mistake in class. And she hadn't been able to get over it. And when she was focused in her solar plexus, this is what she said, to paraphrase, or pretty close to what she actually said. When I was in my solar plexus, I was just so hurt. I just couldn't understand why my friends would tease me like that and make fun of me. And I'm so hurt and I'm angry and I haven't wanted to be with them and hang out with them. And it's just really been bothering me. And then she took her focus up looked again from her third eye, her wise view. And this is what she said. Wow, when I was in my wise view, I saw that my mistakes are good because that's how I learn. And everybody makes mistakes. And then she said, and I saw that my friends were teasing me because they're embarrassed about their mistakes.
Whoa.
And if I'm okay with mine, that might help them be okay with theirs too. And I'm not upset anymore. I'm fine now. Then there was this long pause. I looked around the room and I said, would anybody else like to try this technique? And every hand shot up because we could all feel that when she was focused in her wise view, there was this objectivity and an understanding of, you know, how her friends were feeling, how that affected her. She was like a little sage. Over and over again, I experienced that this one technique from the framework has this dramatic impact. And of course, it's just one technique. There are techniques that support the health and strength and good function of every chakra.
Wow.
So imagine what a sea change it might create if schools were aware of the power of focus to lead to wisdom and discernment and actively helping children cultivate that comparison. Because believe me, once kids get used to this, they prefer it. It doesn't feel good to be trying to feel your way through life.
Yeah, absolutely. I could also see this as such an incredible partner to, I mean, obviously to any like educational like venue, but also like super compatible with like Montessori or things like that, that like it could just be like very much intertwined in a part of the system.
Yeah.
So that's really, really cool, Maureen. I also just want to say a little bit of a plug. When you and I first met in the networking space that we met in, you mentioned all of this about the solar plexus versus the third eye. And as I was away for this emotional weekend with family, I was able to use that a little bit just by a simple shift of like, okay, let's get into the third eye space. And would just take a minute, take a really deep breath, maybe even tap my forehead and just focus on, I was envisioning healing white light in my third eye center. And that would immediately, because I'm a person that struggles with general anxiety disorder, as well as maybe some other things as well. And it was able to, when I would feel that, let's say it through body sensations, feel that nausea rush in, feel that cold rush into my hands. When I was noticing the anxiety in my body and was going to kind of that spinning anxiety space, I would just reset to that third eye space and it would, I'm not kidding you, it just dissipated.
Well, yeah, it's not surprising.
And that was after just hearing, was just after hearing you describe it in one like kind of coffee session together, right?
Yeah.
So I believe that it's a really powerful tool. Maureen, I could talk to you forever. We could talk for hours and hours, I'm certain, and we will continue to chat. But today, I really want people to hear what you offer and how people can work with you or how they can follow along. So first off, how could people work with you and what do you offer?
Sure. They can go to our website, creativelives.org. And the wonderful way to work with me is I'm teaching relatively small, intimate courses. And it's a 9-week training where you really get to understand the function of the system for yourself and then for kids. And, you know, it applies whether we're talking about a social emotional situation or even an academic one. Strengthening that third eye helps kids learn math and reading, etc. So yeah, creativelives.org. We have a training coming up every quarter. So that's a great way to work with me.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sharing all that you did with us today. We're so grateful for it. I would encourage anybody listening, even just as I described that little shift to the third eye, these exercises and this content is not just for children. I am certain that you could access your own healing and your own healing environment, resetting your home environment, whatever you need and whatever it looks like through accessing some of these tools, through accessing Maureen and Ellen Todd's work as well. So don't hesitate to reach out. Maureen is just a gift to chat with. And there's an entire life that you live that we didn't even touch on in this space as far as your own creative work outside of Creative Lives also, and your background and what your own creative process and going public process looks like as well. So maybe you'll come back and you'll share that with us one day. But I am so grateful. Thank you for being here, Maureen.
Too. Karen, what a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Hey, creator. I'm glad you're here. Healing through creating and going public with our wild and wonderful creations is challenging, but I'm here for you and I'm totally with you. In a sense, I am you. Head over to the website at karenhinmer.com or the show notes to get on the email list. By being on my email list, you receive more from me all about healing through creating and connecting through going public. And you get to follow along and allow me to be your creative guide on how I heal and go public as a creator. Join me. Head to karenhubner.com, that's karinhubner.com, or head to the show notes to get on that email list. Thanks for listening. And don't forget, hit that rate and review button while you're here. I would love your feedback. And it helps other people find the show so that they can feel like they have a creative guide on this healing and go public journey. Thanks for being here. Bye.